My name is Scott Haggerty, Chair of the Ledge Committee, and I believe that we have fallen into spot number two today. The first item of business would be to confirm the quorum.
Yes, Mr. Chair, we have a quorum.
Thank you very much. The consent calendar, which is items 2A through 2C. Looking for a motion?
Mr. Chairman, just a question. If we want to discuss SB 878, is this the place to do it?
Yes, sir. This would be the place to take ledge history off consent and have a discussion then.
Okay. I would move consent excluding legislative history so we can discuss
this. So I have a motion on items 2A and 2C.
Second.
Is there any objection to that motion? Motion will pass without objection. We'll move to 2B or not 2B.
Well, I think there's a number of bills up in Sacramento, but I think the focus is on Senate Bill 878, so we'll just cut to the chase on that item. I'm just going to do a quick, just brief review. You know, this bill came to the commission in January, and the commission at that point, the Ledge Committee at that point, determined just not to take any action after there was a bit of discussion from a number of you on the subject. And we've just been sitting there watching this bill. This week the bill was amended. It was amended in such a way that we were unable to agendize it in time for you to discuss it here, so it can't be on your agenda as a result of the Brown Act. But what this item does do is to add a series of principles into this bill. Those principles were distributed to members of the JPC when Mr. DeSonia came down here to discuss this with that group. I think from a substantive point of view, this bill is a study bill. There's some probably a number of things we would seek to have different in this bill if we were to recommend a position to you. I think for a number of you, it's about process, too. The senator made some commitments both to his colleagues and to you all about consultation, and this bill emerged. It's going to be set for hearing on June 13th at Local Government Committee in Sacramento. The legislature goes out of session for a month, so there's plenty of time to engage on this bill if you so wish to do so. So that's just a quick review of where we are as far as just the steps of the process.
Questions, thoughts? Well, pardon me, I'm sorry, Commissioner Wirth, Vice Chair Wirth.
Yeah, I just have a question from a process standpoint. I know that this hasn't been agendized, and it's very unfortunate that we don't have the opportunity under the Brown Act to make any action on this today.
And can I get a legal opinion on that, though, okay, at some point? Because I don't necessarily agree with that, because we are actually voting on ledge history, which is embodied in the agenda, and I would believe that any item that's been shown in ledge history should be available to vote. But go ahead and finish your question.
No. Anyway, I'm not really questioning the legal thing. I tend to be very cautious, as you all know, in terms of compliance with public notice and discussions. But I just wanted to know what options we have if this bill is going forward. I understand that there was a letter, too, that came from JPC, which was, as I understand, I haven't seen it, but very clear in terms of raising concerns that we had. So I wondered if we could have a little more, you know, what's moving forward, where we are.
Commissioner, I'll go first and then ask Adrian to respond to the legal question. At the least, it seems to me we could bring forward a recommendation for your consideration at the commission meeting in June. As Randy indicated, the bill, if it moves out of its assembly trans, is that where it is? That's probably the most it's going to do before their break in July. And assuming they do pass a budget, then they'll take the break in July. And so your position will have a chance of mattering in August when they come back. So that's it seems to me, at the least you could do. Now, whether you can do something today, I'll ask Adrian to opine.
I know her answer.
Well, my predecessor, Francis Chin, had great foresight because of the way he drafted our commission procedures manual. And so what we'll do in a situation like this is it's considered an emergency situation. It came to light after the agenda deadline for this meeting. And so the chair of the committee, with the concurrence of the commission chair, will authorize the executive director to seek to take action, and then we'll come back to the full commission for approval of what was done.
Commissioner Sparing and Commissioner Bates. You know, on the agenda, it says all items on the agenda are subject to action or change by the committee. Actions recommended by staff are subject to change by the committee. And our past practice is that we could take action on it. So you're saying we cannot? I want clarification of what you're saying.
The action is that you can authorize the executive director, who can then delegate to Mr. Rentschler what Mr. Rentschler is proposing to do. And then when you come back to the full commission, you can approve all the action that was taken and the positions that have been taken.
So are you saying that we're prohibited saying I would move that we oppose SB 878, that we don't have the authority to do that today?
Commissioner, that's not what I hear. We've always had this urgency procedure, and it's for the first.
Well, this is an urgency. This is just something on the agenda. I'm not asking for urgency.
Okay, I'll answer it backward then. I would think, and I'm giving you a non-legal opinion, but here's my non-legal advice. The ledge history includes dozens of bills, and I think your taking positions on those bills without them being noted on the agenda really is not very transparent to the public.
Okay.
Because it's such a huge pool of fish. Now, we do have, as I said earlier, this urgency procedure we've always had, and it's for situations like this where bills happen fast. And under that procedure, Mr. Haggerty and Chair Tissier can direct me to do something. And then we do it, and then it comes back to the commission to be ratified in case the commission doesn't agree with what we did. So that's something you could do today. We've also done it outside this committee. We've called them up and said, hey, there's this bill happening. We need you to do blank. I think it might be better to have a discussion today than that can advise those two commissioners whether they ought to do what you all discuss.
Commissioner Bates, Commissioner Campos.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to make a couple of comments. First of all, I think the biggest problem with this is the procedure in which the author has been proceeding.
Yeah.
Because he did give us some information that he was going to, in fact, the JPC, that he would consult with the JPC before he moved forward. Having said that, if you really look at the bill, what the bill says is basically it provides the opportunity for the JPC to do a study and an analysis. As Randy indicated, it's really a study bill. And so the JPC would be authorized and required to do certain steps and come forward to the legislature with a report. So I don't, you know, I feel like on the one hand, the senator has violated sort of his what he said he was going to do, but on the other hand, he's not really not doing anything. I mean, what he's basically doing is putting in place a procedure which I think needs to be discussed and needs to be examined. I mean, so the JPC is now scheduled a meeting for the executive committee. It's going to be on July 9th. What'll happen is between next Wednesday, this bill is up before the Committee on Local Government in the Assembly, and you know, it's a study bill. The biggest problem he's going to have with this bill is would be how is he going to pay for this bill?
Right.
And that's the concern that we should be expressing is that this is, you know, I don't think on the subject, if you really delve into the subject, it's not a bad thing for us, the JPC, to do. The issue is how you're going to pay for it and also the process in which it was evolved. So people can object to the process. People can object to the idea that the state needs to pick up the cost if we're going to do this kind of stuff. And so I personally feel like if we want to take a position, I think it's fine, but I think that in all likelihood, this bill's going to be around for a while, and we could maybe be a little more sober about our approach.
Commissioner Campos, followed by Chair Tissier.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a quick question through the chair. I'm wondering if for future reference, you know, future meetings, if it might be helpful in terms of ensuring our compliance with the Brown Act, but at the same time, our ability to take quick action, if the item can be maybe noticed a little differently, and maybe we can include various bills or legislation that we're considering, because that way the public would be on notice that I know that we may not be able to do that in advance for everything, but I think that if there are different bills that are that were being looked at, listing them might be a good thing so that we can then have an opportunity to take action on them. So I'm hoping that maybe we can do the notice a little differently, if that's possible. Thank you.
Did you?
I think the trick in that would be to figure out which bills to identify. As Randy indicated, let's use this case. This particular bill, I think we brought before you once, and you batted it right back at us and said, take this thing away. So in this particular case, Commissioner, we probably wouldn't have had this bill on the list, and this is the bill we need to talk about now because it's been amended.
Well, I don't know why you couldn't put something under Ledge History that says that any bill it contained in this item can be voted on, and that's notice enough to the public, and I think that would stand the legal test of time. So I think we should look at that.
We will, Mr. Chairman, but if I could just on the spur, just off the top of my head, we like to give you the benefit of our analysis before you act. I think that's our job as staff to vet issues out. I would rather not get in the practice of just starting to take positions on bills just as commissioners bring them up, because we don't know what to be prepared for.
Well, I also think that it was kind of unfair that this bill was dropped almost right after we posted our agenda.
I agree.
And yeah. I think it was a bit sneaky, if you want to know the truth, and I think we need to figure out how to deal with that. Oh, Bates thinks it was smart. Is that what you said?
Well, but again, Mr. Chairman, under our urgency procedures, you have a way to deal with it right now.
Right, but I think you've also said the timeliness of the item is not. But I would like where I'd like this discussion to go is for commissioners to weigh in on how the chair of this organization, Chair Tissier, and myself would move forward working with staff on this bill. I'd like to kind of change the discussion towards that right now. And I think staff understands what we want to do in relationship to looking at, you know, a way that we could deal with these situations in the future as they come up. But having said that, I'll call on the Chairwoman Tissier.
I agree we can talk about the procedure, but I guess we all sat in a room a couple weeks ago and were told that we would have an opportunity to sit down and discuss
right.
sort of the future of our relationship with the senator and this whole idea of regional planning and the JPC. And I find it very disingenuous on his part to be gutting and amending a bill without having any discussions. I mean, I think this is what we've been dealing with from day one, and I really believe that we need to bring this forward as an urgency and oppose it on the grounds that, you know, if this is the relationship we're going to continue to have, then it's a relationship that I think is never going to be positive with the senator. And that's really unfortunate, because I think we walked away saying, okay, we've had our differences, let's sit down and talk, let's figure out what's the best way to go. To put something in it, whether it's good, bad, or indifferent, we haven't had that discussion. Maybe there could be more meat to it. Maybe there could be less meat to it. But the fact of the matter is, we walked away thinking we've started a new relationship, and to do something like this without even calling one of us and saying, I'm going to drop this bill after everything was printed, it really shows me that really was not his intent ever. And to me, that tells me that the relationship we're going to have moving forward is not going to be a positive one. And I don't want to show support for a bill or leave a bill floating out there that, as if we think it's a good thing, when we haven't had any discussion about it. So I would encourage this board to ask the chair of this committee and myself to bring it forward as an urgency measure and say no to the bill. And, you know, if that's what opens up the discussion, so be it. And if it closes discussion, I say so be it.
Commissioner Weiner.
Thank you. I don't know whether, not expressing a view on whether we can take a position today, but I would request that the chair of the legislative committee and the chair of the commission instruct staff to oppose the bill, and I'm confident we'll ratify that, if not unanimously, then close to unanimously.
Commissioner LaCaro.
Yeah, and if there's a concern about taking this up on urgency, then perhaps simply a letter could be drafted that each of us individually would sign. I think it seems to me that that could be something we could do without violating the Brown Act.
We've done that in the past, drafted letters for you to consider and sign in as individuals. We've done that, and I can do so in this case.
Thank you.
Commissioner Bates.
I don't want to justify what the senator's done. But, I mean, you know, he and Chair Tissier indicated that he ended going at the meeting, he said he would clearly work with us on this bill. But at the same time, you should understand the procedure in Sacramento was that if he was going to do anything in this term, he had to take some action. And he had to amend a bill basically in the Assembly because the time to do it in the Senate had passed. So in order for him to have the discussions that he wanted to have with us, he had to amend a bill. So that's the procedural way. Now, I'm not justifying, he was against what we talked about, but procedurally, that was what he had to do. Having been there for 20 years, your deadline has passed of the Senate to pass a bill out of the Senate to get a waiver is almost impossible to do. So what he did was basically bring the subject forward. And, I'm not saying we shouldn't oppose it. I'm just saying that that's the reason.
Chair Tissier.
I just have to make one comment. I get that. I've been around the legislature a long time. We've got great representative in our district. But our district rep would have called me and said, you know what, I need to get something in. We can certainly have deep discussion about it, but just a heads up, this is what we're doing. You know, that's how you work with people. That's when you build relationships. And so I get the procedure, but letting us know would have been, a better way of doing it than dropping it, because he said he was not going to introduce any more legislation until we had the discussion, and that's not what happened here. And so, I just can't defend the action saying, there's a procedure up there. He certainly could have let us know, and I could have, said, okay, well, and let's talk. But that didn't happen, and he did something he said he wasn't going to do. So.
Commissioner Kennedy,
just very briefly, I want to just support our chair's comments in their entirety. Thank you.
Okay. Yeah. Commissioner Rainworth.
I also want to support our chair's comments. And I guess the concern I have is that, the problem about all of this, it's the heavy hand of the state legislature telling local government how to do the job we do. And I think we had a very thoughtful discussion here in this room, a public meeting, and we had certain discussions. And I also am very concerned by these amendments and the fact that this is moving forward. And that the reality is that we don't have to have any legislation to have this conversation. I think we all expressed a willingness to continue to have the conversation. I don't even see the necessity of moving this kind of legislation forward. So I would concur with the sentiment of us, of using the procedure that we have to deal with fast-moving legislation, and with the understanding that comes back to the commission at the our meeting.
Okay, so I guess if DeSonia has done anything, he's made the legislative committee interesting. So, Madam Chair of this esteemed organization, since everybody seems to be throwing their weight behind you, what is it exactly you'd like to do?
I could just ask, maybe from a legal perspective, either can we bring this forward as an urgency measure, or is the best route to say that this group, that the chair of this committee and myself would ask staff to go back and say we're opposing this bill and bring it back to the commission for a full vote, or can we do an urgency measure if we all vote to put it on here today?
Madam Chair, I think the advice to you is we can use our established urgency procedure. That involves you and Commissioner Haggerty agreeing on a position and then instructing us to convey that to the committee and the author, and we would do that by Monday when they want the comments.
Okay,
so we would work with you on the letter that we would send, the two of you.
So
then I would move. I would ask that we do the
commission
urgency
at the end of the month for ratification.
Okay. So I do find that a little backwards, though, because in a way we're actually voting, but we're really not voting. I find it kind of weird, but I'm willing to take that advice. As I understand it, and I may go a little further, but as I understand it, there is sentiment around this body anyways to oppose the bill and ask that it be withdrawn. Does anybody have any problem with that language? Hold on. I'm going to get to you, Mayor Green, at this point. Okay, so at this point, that's kind of where we're at. Mayor Green? Commissioner Green, sorry.
Any of the bad words.
Mark?
Even that. The idea of this being an urgency item, frankly, I don't have any problem with that. My interpretation that it's on the agenda, I'm very liberal, actually, in that context, so I'm fine with the chair and the vice chair moving forward, or I would be fine with even taking a vote on it right here. My individual position would be, of course, I don't think we should be opposing this. I understand the sentiment about being stabbed in the back, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, procedurally. But in terms of concentrating on forgetting procedure and just looking at the bill itself, I don't see it being that draconian or that dastardly, and I don't think it should necessarily be approved as it's written, but I don't think we should just come out and take an outright opposition point to it also, so that would be my stance.
All right, so we've heard it all. Nobody else is asked to speak, and what I portrayed as an opposition asking for the withdrawal is by consensus, and asking that the chair of the commission and the chair of the commission and the chair of the Ledge Committee work with staff to send the appropriate letters. That's how I'm hearing it. There you have it. Okay, that was item 2C. We'll move to item 3.
Good morning, Commissioners. Rebecca Long, MTC staff. The state budget May revise has been released, and generally it's pretty good news for transportation. We have succeeded in, through voter initiative, protecting most transportation funds controlled by the state. So for the most part, state transit assistance funding is secure. It's actually looking like it's going to go up above and beyond what we estimated in January due to higher diesel prices. The one piece where transportation has become vulnerable, once again, is the one piece where it's not ironclad in the Constitution, and that is the new excise tax on gas, the portion of that fuel that is consumed by off-highway vehicles. Apparently, Proposition 22 did not protect that piece of the funding, and so it's actually been held in reserve by the Department of Finance. And the governor is proposing to redirect those funds to the general fund. It's not a huge amount of money. In total, it's $312 million. That includes 2 years. So the proposal is $184 million. That's from prior years. And going forward for fiscal year 12-13 and beyond, roughly $130 million. That works out to about $81 million statewide for local streets and roads and about $56 million and for the STIP as well, and then $56 million going forward. CSAC has been pretty active in lobbying this issue. I think where it looks like it's going to land is that the legislature will approve this diversion for 3 years, but will also adopt language that corrects the drafting of the gas tax swap that really is allowing this to happen. That's where that is. So it's really one source of diversion, not affecting public transit, but somewhat reducing STIP and local streets and roads. High-speed rail is still kind of up in the air. The administration requested about almost $3 billion specifically focused on construction of the Central Valley segment. The legislature still has some reservations about funding this, including Senator Desaunier and others, Senator Lowenthal. And so it looks like those funds will perhaps be appropriated in sort of increments rather than providing the full $3 billion. I think they might provide sort of a progress payment to allow some payment to proceed and not lose the federal funding, but not appropriate the full $3 billion in one fell swoop. So that is really the most, I guess, outstanding issue affecting the transportation budget. And then with the connectivity funds as well, those funds, governor did request $816 million for the full connectivity funding that would include the MOU that we signed with Caltrain and others. But those funds are not going to be appropriated unless there's also funding for the capital segment of the statewide high-speed rail system. So, you know, we're kind of waiting to see how that shakes out. One piece of good news on that is the CTC has recommended full approval of all of the Bay Area's connectivity funding in Prop 1A. So that's good news. As you know, there was some, you know, concern that if they weren't directly related to connectivity, they wouldn't count. But that all looks good. With that, happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Any questions? Rebecca, thank you very much for that report. We'll move to item 4, Alameda County Measure B.
Mr. Chair, briefly, this next item is a recommended support on an item that's going to be before the Alameda County voters in November, which is colloquially known as B3, the third time that a half-cent sales tax will be before the voters in Alameda County. Our recommended support is based on a number of things. The first thing is this is significant funds for transportation. It meets a lot of the policy objectives that you all have discussed in our plan, including a fix it first, a public transit emphasis, which you can see a table of the expenditures on the second page of our memo. It also includes a complete streets requirement for the local streets and roads fund. So there's a lot of good news here. I know that Commissioner Green and Commissioner Haggerty have been intimately involved in this. We also have representatives from the Alameda County Transportation Commission as well, if you have any questions. But very briefly, we would recommend that you support this item and recommend to the full commission that they support it as well.
Thank you. Mayor Green, you chaired this esteemed organization. Anything?
Well, again, I think it's relatively self-explanatory at this point. I mean, looking at the plan support page itself, which I might add even Berkeley came across, so I give Mayor Bates and his fellow Berkeleyans credit up there for being the 14th city in our county to come across the line. So we do have an extraordinarily wide and deep amount of support on this at this point. Polling showing very well. And I think if you look at the summary of investments by mode, actually the bike and pedestrian is listed at 8, but when you add in the fact that we're giving 15% of 30% out of complete streets going to bike and ped, you could make an argument it's really like over 12% for bike and ped improvements, which is more than highways even. So even though Texas is going to an 85-mile-an-hour speed limit, I might just throw in that quickly in for everybody here. In a segment between San Antonio and Austin, we didn't go that quite that far in Alameda County yet. So with that, I would move approval of this, Mr. Chair, on this
item. Yeah, I have some speakers on this. I'll take the motion in a second, but we're going to continue under discussion. So Manolo Gonzalez to stay.
Good morning, Commissioners. I won't take up too much time. On behalf of Transform, I don't know if all of you have heard, we're very involved, intricately involved for several years on the process, the public process that ACTC staff put together, which was a very positive process to include everybody and get all the input in. We're happy to say that we support Measure B, and we'll be working with other allies and partners, such as Dave from East Bay Bicycle Coalition, who has given me authority to let you all know that he's also supporting it for the bikes and for everything else that's on there, too. We'll look forward to working with you, and we hope that you do support this. We think that Alameda will be a better place if this passes, and it'll be an example to other places around the nation, around the state, that we can do this and do some positive things. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Alameda County is already pretty outstanding. But Dave, did you want to say anything? I mean, come on. Really?
What he said.
Okay, fine. What he said. With that, I think we only had two council members vote against it in the entire county. Is it two? And one abstention, one brave soul. So with that, I had a motion and a second. Is there any objection to the motion? Thank you very much. Motion passed without objection. Move to item 5.
Thank you, Chair Haggerty. This item is about a new subject for this commission, and that is cap and trade. I'm sure many of you are at least somewhat familiar with the idea, and you know that California is about to enter a brave new world this November with the first auction to be held on cap and trade of carbon allowances. I'm just going to give kind of a quick overview. If you want, you know, more background, there's a wealth of literature out there, but I know we have a busy morning, and then what we are going to recommend today is some principles for advocacy. Essentially, where this is heading is that the legislature is likely adopt legislation this year, but it looks like that legislation will really empower the administration, ARB, to adopt an expenditure plan. So the principles would likely be more oriented towards lobbying the administration, working the expenditure plan next year. But things can change quickly in Sacramento, and that may end up not being the case, and maybe they will adopt legislation this year that goes further than they're talking about. So we do feel like this is a timely issue, and we need to get sort of our marker out there as to what we think how the funding should be used, and certainly we think some of it should go to transportation. So big picture, what's at stake? Of course, funding is the big issue here. There are, is estimated to be around a big range here because the we don't know what the price of carbon is going to be. So ARB has set a floor and a cap. The floor is $10 per ton. The cap is $50 per ton. So that's a 1-in-5 ratio of the potential revenues, which works out to between $660 million and $3.3 billion in the next budget year. The first auction is going to be held in November, and that will give us some sense of what the price is going to be, but each auction, you know, it will change. The administration requested about $500 million of the funding go towards general fund offsets. So these are GHG reducing projects or expenditures within the general fund. This funding is basically, most legal experts have said, it is a fee. It's a mitigation fee or a regulatory fee, and therefore it has to be spent on projects that either reduce greenhouse gas emissions or mitigate for their effects. So it's no one has really done a detailed line-by-line accounting of what's in the general fund that fits that test. Originally, the LAO raised doubt that there was even $500 million. And then they sort of backtracked and said, well, maybe there is even more than $500 million. So what the legislature has adopted in the budget so far, both houses have said, we will appropriate at least $500 million of this money in the fiscal year 12-13 budget for general fund relief. But again, we don't know exactly how much that is. So what we're talking about as far as at least within the next budget year, what we could lay claim to is the balance. That might be $2.5 billion. It could be only $500 million. But, you know, going forward, the revenue is going to get much, much higher. I guess I should say spend a moment talking about how the different industries are affected. So starting this year in November, the energy sector, electricity, utilities, all of that, power plants are all going to be part of this cap. Transportation fuels become subject to the cap in 2015. The revenue goes like this in 2015. So it's a huge jump. It's going to go from anywhere from $1 billion a year to $5, $6 billion a year. So right now we're talking sort of gradual implementation, but it's going to be much bigger source of revenue going forward. So let's see. I think I've covered the main items, and now what I'd like to do is just walk you quickly through the principles that we are advocating for. And I should say that a lot of other folks are having these conversations, and I think from what I've seen so far, what the Alliance for Jobs is saying, what CSAC is saying, what the California Transit Association is saying, and all of those organizations are, in fact, working together as a coalition, and I think they'd love to have MTC and other MPOs join that coalition. We're all kind of saying the same thing, so that's good news. So the first principle on the attachment to your memo is that we would advocate that a multi-year expenditure plan be developed by the administration with ample opportunity for public input, and that the legislature should be empowered to make adjustments to that plan before final adoption by the ARB. So the administration originally was kind of saying, hey, we'll develop the plan and we'll tell you 30 days before we start spending the money, but just give us the right to spend it however we want, basically. And we don't think that that's appropriate. So we do want to see some role for the legislature in approving an expenditure plan. The second principle is that, of course, in addition to meeting any of the legal requirements of the funds, that the expenditure plan should maximize other benefits to California, including improved mobility, livability, public health, and social equity. I think one of the comments that I was most struck by at the recent ARB hearing they held to get public input on this is just the importance of this program working well. You know, it's great if California has a well-functioning cap-and-trade program within our state, but for this to really have any impact on climate change, it needs to be replicated across the nation and across the globe. And so how that's going to happen is if it has durability within California, that it's popular with the public. We know the initiative process works very well here, at least works very extensively, and if it's not popular and if people aren't seeing benefits and all they're seeing is increased cost, then it could be repealed. So by providing co-benefits, I think that's one way to achieve that. As far as transportation, we would like to advocate that transportation receive somewhere close to 40% of the revenue. What I wrote in here, we wrote in here, is that that's the portion remaining after general fund eligible expenditures are offset. You know, I think that's something, that's a policy issue we should discuss. Maybe we don't want to be that generous to the general fund. But we think, you know, for whatever the pie is that we're all fighting over, we should get at least 40% of that, because that's our contribution to the problem, and we would like to share in the that portion of revenue to help reduce the emissions. We believe that it makes the most sense to mirror the SB 375 structure by providing those the majority of the transportation funding to MPOs so that we can deliver on the promises of SB 375. I don't need to belabor the unfunded costs that we have to do that. We think it makes sense that each region's share be allocated on a formula basis that reflects a geographically equitable distribution of funds. We don't speak in these principles whether that's population, whether it's our share of GHG, but some type of predictable formula that makes sense. Finally, on project eligibility, we would like to see, you know, any legislative language be very broad with respect to transportation, with the only real requirement being that you have to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. So we envision these funds could be eligible for bike ped, they could be eligible for transit operations, some transit capital perhaps, ITS projects, ramp metering. I mean, there's many modes that can help reduce greenhouse gas emissions. And lastly, each set of expenditures that is funded by the MPOs would have to be consistent with the SCS, which is kind of a no-brainer. And with that, I'm happy to open it up to a discussion.
Commissioner LaCaro.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Two questions. One is trying to understand if there's a legal nexus requirement because this is mitigation fee revenue. How does the governor's choice of using $500 million to fill a gap in the general fund reduce greenhouse gas emissions?
So the way that I understand it is that essentially there's not a requirement for, quote, additionality of this funding. So in other words, as long as the funds are being used for projects that reduce greenhouse gas emissions, it's fine. So if they have ARB, presumably has many other programs today that reduce greenhouse gas emissions, and the Department of, you know, Natural Resources, et cetera. So as long as those projects reduce GHG, you can shift funding around. It doesn't
so it'll be swapping revenue.
Exactly.
Okay. And then in terms of how the money gets distributed, you know, my understanding is that SCAG and other MPOs are thinking about a position where the money is just distributed to the CMAs directly through some formula. I know that I imagine this is going to be a topic of active conversation should the 40% or something similar to it materialize. But what I'm hoping in these recommendations is it does not exclude the possibility that the funding that MPOs would receive would be in turn distributed on a formula basis, whether it's through OBAG or a similar type of formula program, with certification that is that MTC would have to be able to certify that the funding choices made by the individual CMA in fact reduce greenhouse gas emissions and comply with our SCS. Steve?
Commissioner, it doesn't preclude that. I will say that historically we have done business in the Bay Area quite a bit differently than Los Angeles, and I think we are the better for it. And if you look at just OBAG as an example, as you recall, it was divided. There was some of the money went out to the counties by formula. Some of it we retained here to run our regional programs like Clipper or 511 that have greenhouse gas benefits. So I think in some cases it's better to spend the money from a central location regionally, because it doesn't make sense to have 24 Clipper cards or, you know, 12 511 numbers. But it probably would make sense that for some of the money to follow the OBAG format and further incentivize that partnership. So in my view, what we're probably looking for is some sort of mixed bag along those lines. We do believe that decision ought to be made here, though, because once the money's busted up, you can't put it back together again.
Yeah, I understand the point. I guess I'm thinking a bit about what we all anticipate will be ongoing holes in fundamental operations and running transit agencies throughout the region, and concerned that a competitive grant program.
Yeah, and if I could just touch on that briefly, Commissioner, because I think that's one thing that perhaps Rebecca didn't emphasize enough, or maybe she did. Let me reemphasize it. This money could be very, very volatile. It could swing wildly year to year. And if you'll recall, the fight we had for several years with the legislature over the spillover money for transit, and eventually we lost that fight and got into a situation where we've got a more stable and predictable revenue stream. So I would caution us that one of the things we've got to think about when we think about what to spend this money on is things that they won't crater if we don't get the same level of money next year. And transit operations is one of the things that does.
Understood. Thank you.
Vice Chair Rainworth.
Thank you very much. First of all, I want to thank staff for bringing this forward in this format for us to begin the conversations. Our Assembly Member Susan Bonilla had a cap-and-trade forum in Contra Costa County. I know Rebecca was there month or so ago, and it was very insightful, and people are focusing first of all on the stationary source cap and trade, but of course the huge impact is going to happen, as Rebecca said, in 2015 when the cap and trade on refined gasoline kicks into gear. And from hearing from the oil companies, they're going to pay that tax, and it will go right onto a receipt when a consumer goes to a gas station to buy gasoline. So the nexus between this fee and transportation becomes even clearer. So I think that these principles are very good. And I concur with the comments, too, that Commissioner Liccardo made, and certainly staff's awareness and response in terms of how we best can utilize these funds. But clearly, you know, consumers are going to be paying these fees, and they're going to know it. And so I think that it's important that we be part of this coalition, and also, as Steve indicated, recognizing that in the Bay Area we have a way that we distribute funds that really works both in terms of local initiatives as well as the regional initiatives. So I think I really appreciate the fact that these principles are coming forward now, which will give us a chance to be part of this broader discussion.
Okay, so I guess at this point, seeing no other lights, I'm looking for a motion. Somebody? Motion to support. Moved by Vice Chair Rainworth.
Second.
Seconded by Commissioner Hallstatt. Is there any objection to the motion? Motion passed without objection. Move now to 6A, Surface Transportation Reauthorization.
Mr. Chair, Commissioners, this next item could be a big deal if it gets through, and that is a deal between the Senate and the House and the U.S. Congress on a long-term surface transportation reauthorization, long-term in this case being more than 6 months. So there has been some formal offers back and forth. I think that the members are at that point where they need to make some decisions. I think the likelihood of them doing a longer deal, which is what the Senate wants, as opposed to a shorter deal, which is what the House wants, likely it's going to go toward the House because that's just status quo. Again, they are in the throes of the negotiations. A formal offer has been given by the Senate to the House, mostly on subject matters not related to transportation, mostly, not in all cases. The Republicans in the House, for example, are not big fans of the Tea program, and although we can make a good analogy to the Tea Party, but in this case we're talking about transportation enhancements. So in any event, I don't really have any news to report to you other than the fact that they are in negotiation, and I think it's likely that we'll see another short-term extension.
Okay. Maybe they can show they did something in this session. Anybody, any questions? Seeing none, we'll move to Bolger's report.
Tom's report is there for you. He's active on the subject right now, including letters from MPOs across the state and across the nation to try to make clear to Senator Boxer what we think the bill ought to be.
If anybody's having a hard time sleeping, read Bolger's report. It'll be very helpful. Item 7. Come on, Steve. Crack a smile. Item 7. Any business before this committee before I adjourn it? We're adjourned.